My pet mouse Elvis died last night. He was caught in a trap.
Wow. That might be the loudest Medden laugh ever.
That's a rare Medden laugh.
I love a bit of Elvis as well, though. So yeah, that's
all Medden laughs go. That's really good. I don't think we've ever seen that.
No.
Ever.
I liked that.
Remarkable scenes.
Absolute scenes. I was surprised. I knew Lawrence would like it, but Medlin, that's... I have to remember that. Elvis, tick. You're like my dad. Anything Elvis related, he loves. Although we have been to Graceland together, so
exactly,
I feel like we should have known that.
We've driven around lot of Memphis playing Elvis non-stop, so...
That's true. I did know that deep down, I think. I just forgot it. Yeah. But, with all due respect, Medlin, your opinion, when it comes to my jokes, less important than the opinion of Mr. Barreto here.
Well, I'm going to take Medlin's reaction into account because, frankly, he's never laughed like that. So
ever at anything, not just to my jokes.
Happiest
he's
day of
never
my life.
he's never felt joy in any capacity.
And I loved it too, Nate. So I'm going to give you a score of 9.9.
Oh, what was the missing 0.01?
It just because. I don't want to ruin the score.
Because you want to keep it different.
I just want to make sure that it wasn't in the top five jokes you've ever told. Well, but I did love it a lot. So I wanted to give it as much
9.9
love. Yes, I wanted to give it as much love. But you know, maybe it. I can't remember the scores I've given already, but I want it to be the top 10.
I think the scoring system is kind of fluid, but I like that. I like that. You know, it's a fluid system and we're just going to roll with it.
Oh, you know what? No, stop it. I'm upgrading it to 10. I loved it. I did love it. It's a 10. It's a 10. It's a 10.
No, it's too late now. I haven't given it one. I don't want a handout 10.
I'm sorry, Nate. I'm in control of the scoring system. If I want to change the score, I feel that's okay.
Yeah, but I respectfully decline the revision. Yeah, no, I do. I don't want a 10. I want the 9.99. We haven't had that yet in the pod, I don't think. So I feel
true. And only 2 weeks, not 2 weeks, only two episodes ago, you had a 10.2. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Medlin, what do you think? You're the adjudicator here. Can I reject a 10?
You can.
Especially a 10 that wasn't a 10.
The thing is, you can only reject if you think it's too high and you were given a score you're happy
with.
You can only reject if you were given a score you're happy with. So in future, if he did that and it was like, I don't know, a 5, and you're like, yeah, I'll take that. And then he wanted to revise it to much higher, and you wanted that higher one. You can't take that either. So you've made, you bought
made
your ticket,
my bed.
You know what you're getting into.
Nice, good airplane reference.
Welcome to the Paddock, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. You've got Chris, you've got Nate, and you've got me for the latest episode. And I'm sorry it's been so long since we've last done this. I've been fortunate enough to see these boys recently, but you guys have not been fortunate enough to listen to these boys. So the good thing is we've squeezed an episode in, haven't we?
Well, so you're not telling one them. In. You're not telling them the whole truth. We're actually much like the Beatles, both in terms of talent, but also in terms of relationship. We can't stand to be in the same room together.
That's not true.
It makes it really awkward. That's why we're doing this over Zoom. I can't even. I've turned my camera off. Not my camera. Their two cameras. I can't even look at them. I can just hear them, and it makes me sick, physically sick. But otherwise, we're good. Otherwise, things are fine. Just to clarify, everyone, we're not like the Beatles in talent or temperament. We're just a bunch of F1 journos who are very good friends.
Yes.
So.
It has been nearly a month, though, since our last episode. It was before Barreto's stag. So it's been some time. And as listeners may have worked out, Barreto did survive because he's here. You can hear it. We haven't superimposed
this. Bad news. Bad news, everyone. Apologies.
No!
We tried to throw him into the water. It just didn't work.
Well,
you threw me in three times. Yeah. You threw me in three times.
Yeah, true. Well, we tried.
I had so many bruises the next day that I hadn't realised. That I got,
really?
Presumably when I was climbing out of the marina.
There was one point that you climbed out after the second time you'd been in and sat like kind of on the edge of the marina just to compose yourself, and I was behind you and I kicked you back in. And I did feel a little bit bad for that because your back was turned, but it looked nice in there. It was hot. So
lovely.
I very nearly jumped in after you, but then I didn't want people to see that, you know, me floundering around trying not to swim. Try not to swim. Try not to sink.
Hopefully, you're trying to.
Trying not to swim. That's interesting.
Can you not swim very well?
I can swim very well, but just you know, I didn't want any whaling jokes or anything like that.
Do you know what else you can do very well?
If you've only got 1 minute to spare, wanna know who finished when and where? Sit back, relax, cause we got you. Here's Nate with the 60-second review.
Toodle pip, mum's the word. Apples and pears, apples and pears. Hello everyone. As you may now have guessed, this is my review of the 2022 British Grand Prix. And to continue the tradition, I'm going to do the first bit to the Dutch National Anthem in honour of our illustrious champion, Max Verstappen. So I'm going to start in 3, 2, 1. McLaren started the year really bad, but Lando's P2. The upgrade worked as it was meant to, but can it do it on slow speed too? Lewis Hamilton was in third position, splitting the McLarens. Oscar Piastri, unlucky mate. You know, you're winning the Ashes, you didn't get the podium. I think that's a fair trade. Although, joking aside, mega job from Oscar Piastri. That's why Zak Brown was willing to go to court to get you, I guess. George Russell in fifth position, that was good. Sergio Perez, we need to have a word. Sixth position in the best car in Formula One's recent history. Got to do better, mate. There's an Aussie. There's an Aussie-shaped cloud hanging over his head now. Fernando Alonso in seventh. What's happened to Aston? Albon, driver of the year so far for me, in eighth position. Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. Mamma mia. Ferrari down at the bottom of the points. Logie Sarge was 11th. That was nice. What else happened? Gasly didn't finish. Ocon didn't finish. Bad day for Alpine. And that's about it. Bye.
I always manage the times bad at the end. I don't know what happens. I get carried away with like fifth or sixth position like I did then.
In fact, I'm going to just make sure. I'm just gonna check this. Hang on a second.
Toodle pip, mum's the word. Apples and pears, apples and pears. Hello, everyone. As you may now have guessed, this is my review of the 2022 British Grand Prix. And to continue the tradition, I'm going to do the first bit to the Dutch National Anthem in honour of our illustrious champion, Max Verstappen. So I'm going to start in 3, 2, 1.
You don't need to start. There's two issues there.
2022.
You call it the 2022 race. So that's last year.
Okay.
But
you've got
you
me.
Also kind of don't mention the fact that Max Verstappen actually won the race.
No, that's why I'm doing the Dutch National Anthem. We know he won. That's now so known. I don't need to waste 60 seconds saying Max Verstappen won. Everyone knows that.
You just start honoring at P2.
Just start at P2. Yeah. Okay. I'm doing it in the Dutch National Anthem in honor of him winning. He's mega. What else am I going to say? Max won.
Well, I noticed you said he's the illustrious champion because he is the defending champion. So I got that much. But then
although
it went straight into Lando.
That's wrong, isn't it? Because if that was the 2022 British Grand Prix, he wasn't. Oh, no, no, shit.
He
no,
was.
I know. Don't open that can of worms again, mate.
Wait a minute. Let's debate Abu Dhabi 21, shall we? Because that's not been talked about yet. It's a Sunday evening in early December. Nicholas Latifi has crashed into the wall. What's going to happen?
Anyway.
We've killed the pod again, haven't
yeah,
we?
No,
Okay, well, let's chat about the British Grand Prix. We were all there.
The 2023 one.
The 2023 edition.
Yeah. I mean, the 2022 one was brilliant. Yeah, through goes Hamilton and other such things.
We're going to get a line into it from Monty. He's about to come home. This is about to get crazy. Don't know if the mic's going to pick it up, but if we're ready for it.
We're ready. Let's crack on. But I'm not Monty's background. There he is. I can hear him.
Wow.
Now, listeners, that's just Meadows. He's just really upset about the review. Yelping.
Oh, he's so excited. Monty is so excited.
So excited. He's gone crazy.
I'm
the one that went away, but he's the one who was out. So, I mean,
are dogs
really,
ever
I
not
go ahead.
Like that excited? Are they ever not just like, oh, hey, how you doing? Nice to see you.
When you leave a room, pretty much, actually, that's kind of it, yeah. Like, I mean, he's just a bit calmer than that. But...
Yeah, it's like every time they see it, it's like the first time they've seen anything. They're like, oh my God, biggest day of my life.
Huge. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I could have muted and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to.
No. Good interlude. Thanks, Monty.
It's back again. He's gone again.
anyway, Nate, British Grand Prix.
Nate, you only turned up halfway through the weekend though, didn't you?
I did. I did indeed.
Why was that?
Because of Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. I went on Thursday to see Bruce. at Hyde Park. And then because obviously Friday's just a practice day, I was like, oh, I can just, you know, I can cover back home if needed. But I was basically off and I didn't miss anything. I understand Sonny Hayes had a, you know, had a good start to the weekend. So I missed some of that stuff. But Bruce was amazing. 3 hour set. Let me read his encore. Okay. This is the encore of after someone's played for 2.5 hours, 2.5 bloody hours. I'm talking like this because I'm trying to find the encore as we speak in my phone. Okay, everybody, here it is. This is song 22. This starts with Born in the USA. Absolute banger. One of his best songs. Rarely plays it as well. 23, Born to Run. Another classic. 24, Bobby Jean. Everyone loves that. All begin with B's so far. No, notice a pattern? There isn't one. So get out of your head. 25, Glory Days. Doesn't begin with B, but is a great song. 26, my favorite, Dancing in the Dark. Absolute classic. And then 27th, 10th Avenue Freeze Out. That's after 2.5 hours, Beretta.
That's a hell of an encore.
It is, isn't it? What was he playing for the first 2.5 hours, you ask? Well, no, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that to our listeners. Next time I'll read the first 21 songs.
This is reminding me of the episode where you just listed names of places in Australia.
That was one of our... Well, it's a mixed episode. I think that's had some of the worst reviews, but I quite enjoyed it.
Has it? I thought it went down well. Did it go down badly? I didn't pay attention.
No, I just know one person who listened to it and was like, what were you doing? I was like, we were listing places in Western Australia. Keep up. Come on, in Perth. A great episode, I thought. We should do it again sometime. Anyway, sorry. So yes, I did. I missed Media Day, but I didn't miss anything. I didn't miss anything important. I didn't miss qualifying. Didn't miss the race. And I didn't miss Bruce Springsteen. So all in all, 10 out of 10 weekend.
And then you didn't miss the bit we were going to talk about pretty much from the start of this podcast and haven't actually mentioned yet.
What's that? What happened this week?
There was a pretty tire test.
Was it?
Yeah. And it was riveting.
It was okay?
Yeah.
Anything happen? Anything happen after it?
After it? No, during it.
During it?
Yeah.
Someone spin?
They did. Yeah.
They did, actually. A few of them spun. Yeah. Spun. Some people spun some headlines. Some PR was spun. We're talking about Danny Rick, dear listeners.
Wow, I wasn't sure how long it was going to take you to get there.
Well, I just assume we are. I don't know, Medders might be talking about Mick Schumacher's tyre test. I don't know. But yeah, Danny Rick back at AlphaTauri.
So Danny Rick's Pursuit of Greatness is back on, Nate.
That is
the name of your book, isn't it? That is the name
Pursuit,
of your book.
Pursuit of Greatness, in brackets, back on, question mark. Close brackets, you know, to keep it grammatically grammatically tight. No, I mean, amazing news. Absolutely amazing news. And it seems like the way it kind of developed over the weekend was pretty crazy. You know, he basically realized there's a potential here. I think he spent Monday kind of reaching out to people and being like, what's this team actually like? You know, I know what Red Bull's like, but I don't, you know, it's been a long time. And then, yeah, Tuesday, mega. I think Medders was the first non-Dutch speaking journalist to actually break it. So
you make it sound like I don't speak Dutch.
Speak Dutch right now. Say, my name's Chris Medland, and I'm Dutch.
Give me a second.
Silence. Deafening silence there from the supposed Dutch Chris Medland.
Can we let this play out, though? Because I'm looking forward to his pronunciation.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We wait until he says something in Dutch.
What do you want me to say again?
Hello, my name's Chris Medland, and I am Dutch.
I am Dutch.
I am Dutch, which would be like...
Or I'm Dutch, you know.
Ich bin Dutch or something. I am, but you know.
You know, it's not as quite as challenging as you'd think, although I will be murdering it, I'm sure. But it's, hello, my name is Chris Medland, and ich bin Netherlands.
Nice. Yeah. Mate, that was very believable.
That was better than I thought you were going to deliver. Yeah.
Wow. Chris van der Medland there, everyone. Chris 10 Medland. 10 with a small T, like Ten Hag.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, what do you guys think? I know we're all big Danny Rick fans. It's pretty great news, isn't it? For Nick DeVries, it's kind of shitty. We can get into that. But for Danny Rick, pretty mega.
Yeah, it's a weird one. So I interviewed Danny on Sunday pre-race live on our radio show. And he was in like quite a mischievous mood. And like, I'm pretty sure he knew by then, or knew that it was on the cards at that point. Because I'll fast forward to the whole point that Red Bull then did. Oh, it was the tire test that really, like, yeah, he was so quick, and we're like, we've got to get him in. But they don't make that decision that quickly. Like, if he's in the car, like, how are you going to get him to sign the contract or agree to do it or whatever?
I think it just any lingering doubts there were, they were just like, okay, this is, you know, this guy is as good as it was. I think the deal was basically pretty much done. Mm-hmm. He gets in the car and they're like, cool, we're going to do it. Because also some of his guys were obviously stateside still, so, you know, they had to wait a little bit for that.
That he didn't know. Like, he was very much aware by, I don't know when, but Sunday when I spoke to him, he must have known. And at one point he said he was, like, basically hanging out to get back in the car and really wanted to come back, and he was missing racing and this sort of stuff. And it was the first time he'd properly gone from, no, the brake's good for me, to, I want to get back, and I'm confident I will. So, I really wish I'd picked up on that. But it wasn't that explicit and obvious.
I had the same kind of thing. I got there Saturday. I went down to Red Bull because I had to actually talk to either Ricardo or one of his guys from CAA just about some other stuff. And walk in, and Ricardo's right behind me, and I was like, "Oh, hey, you know, how's it going?" We chatted a little bit, and you guys will know, you go up the ramp, and you're right there by that bar, and we were just stood there, and he was kind of waiting to go talk to some people, and I was like, "Don't let me keep you." He's like, "No, it's fine." I said, "How's, you know, looking forward to the test?" He said, "Yeah, man." So I've been really looking forward to it. And he said something along the lines of, like, I didn't realize how much I've missed being in an F1 car. Mm. And I was like, huh, yeah, cool. And then, you know, sometimes how your brain just doesn't pick up on obvious stuff. It felt like an obvious point to be like, well, you know, looks like, you know, the obvious question then would have been, well, there might be a vacancy there. I don't know if you know, AlphaTauri, like, feels like, you know, if there's any point to be keen to get back into a car, it's then. So from what I understand from, like, this week, I think basically he was like, look, if this is something we're going to do and this is the only chance I'm going to get to do it, we got to do it now. You know, you can't wait 6 months. Liam Lawson could come in, could do a mega job. Helmut Marko could say, well, look, we've got Liam Lawson in, you know, we're going to keep him there, going to keep Yuki there, you know, for however long. And then boom, that the small door you'd given yourself to come back into F1 is completely gone because you didn't want to take it. So I totally get why. I just don't know how good he's going to be able to be, because that car's pretty bad, as Nick De Vries found out.
I think that's partly why he didn't really want to do it, and that's why he always really wanted to come back in 2024. A, he wanted to escape having this car. B, he wanted to have a good pre-season, I think, coming into his return. Mm. Also, fitness-wise, like, I'm not saying he's not in shape, but he's obviously not been training to the point that he would have done if he was in full-time racing.
But you're right, that's the other thing he said to me. I said, how are you feeling about the test? He said, yeah, I think my neck's gonna fall off, but other than that, I think we're good. So I think he was like, you know, the fitness isn't quite where he wants to be.
I mean, that was Silverstone as well, wasn't it? So, like, yeah, properly high speed circuit where you're gonna need it, but, and in the Red Bull, which is a great car. But that's the weird thing, if he's shown that he's quick in the Red Bull, it's like, good, but you've got to be quick in the car that's 10th in the championship, not first.
Yeah,
he kind of didn't have a lot of choice, I don't think, because if Helmut's asked him to come back,
and that's probably in his contract, isn't it? It's like, well, what are you doing as third driver if there's a seat free for Red Bull?
Yeah.
So I feel like that contract, I feel like it's kind of, as much as I do think Ricardo was hankering to get back into the car, I think to you, Meadows, he said he had ants in his pants, didn't he? Was that to you?
He did, yeah.
Which is a great quote, and about getting back into racing. But I feel like as well, like, if it was down to, if it was purely down to him, I think he'd still, like you say, Lawrence, like, the car just, this isn't exactly the greatest opportunity ever. And I don't know, I feel like if it was purely down to him, he'd probably still say no. But obviously he's in a situation now where it's like, well, look, if you don't say yes to this, Red Bull aren't going to turn back to you and say in 6 months' time, oh, this seat's open again, do you want it on your terms now? They'll be like, well, no, you didn't want it 6 months ago. What, you know, why do you want it now? So
I think so.
All of that's come into it.
I also think he's got a bit of cover now, because obviously the car is so difficult that it's not going to be the end of the world if he, say, he only ends up scoring a few points this year. He's basically just got to outscore or outperform Yuki. That's got to be, like, the key thing. If he's not delivering, like, massive points every week, they're clearly just not going to expect that to do it. He just needs to show them enough, I think, because they were always going to put him, I think, back in AlphaTauri before. He was never going to jump straight to Red Bull. So he's just got to do enough at that team to prove that if they decide to get rid of Checo, that Daniel's ready to get back up again.
And if they think he's as good as he looked, sorry, Mattis, if he is as good as he looked in the test, even if nothing happens for Ricardo, it gives them a really good read on Yuki as well. So
exactly.
I feel like from that point of view, Red Bull are kind of in this great situation where it's like, well, we can measure what Yuki's about, you know, and obviously his temperament's kind of been questioned, you know, like, Yuki's a bit of a nutcase sometimes, like, you know, the way he drives, like, he's just, sometimes you're like, you know, which Yuki are you going to get? He's going to have to find a level of performance if Ricardo's up there. But at the same time, you know, Ricciardo didn't fare well against his last teammate, so no guarantee he does it again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I spoke to one of Yuki's engineers there in Miami, and they were saying about how calm Yuki was this season, like how much calmer he's got the longer he's been in F1, and that it's kind of a bit of an unfair portrayal that he gets on like team radio and stuff because they really go for it on him. But yeah, I think in a sense, Red Bull were going, we're learning nothing really about either Yuki or Nick right now. Like Nick wasn't doing anything that was going to convince them that he might potentially become a Red Bull driver in future. And that's essentially what that team's there for. I feel it was massively harsh that he deserved longer to try and prove himself. But I get that it wasn't just a case of, oh, Nick's not done well enough, we'll get rid of him. It was because getting Daniel in meant, as you say, you learn more about Yuki and about Daniel. But it also shows to Checo that they're serious about if Daniel's good enough, then he could end up back at Red Bull. So he's got to raise his game on a Saturday. And I think in Red Bull's perfect scenario, Daniel's going to perform at AlphaTauri, but Checo's going to improve a little bit. And then they go, great, we've got a brilliant backup waiting. We've got who's doing marketing work for us, and he's in our junior team as well. Like, he's not, we've got Daniel Ricciardo racing for us, and he's not even in our top team. Like, from a marketing perspective as well, that's brilliant for them. I kind of think that's their perfect scenario, and they all kind of intertwine. So if you didn't have, say, Checo underperforming, and they didn't feel the need to try and put a bit of pressure on him, then they probably don't rush Daniel into that seat and Nick gets a bit longer. And that's all got nothing to do with actually how Nick performs, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. I think that Nick, De Vries was unlucky, but it just seems so obvious, didn't it, from even like four races in. It was like they're not impressed with him at all. Also, you're completely right on the dream scenario. They're also trying to sell the title of the team, aren't they? Mm. So if you can turn around to a sponsor and say, well, look, Danny Rick's your driver now, you've probably just added a bunch, you've added to that sum that you can ask for. Because rather than saying you've got Tsunoda and you've got De Vries, you can say, well, you've got probably behind Lewis, maybe behind Max, the most marketable guy in Formula One right now in the junior team. You know, you can ask for a lot more money there. So I think from a marketing standpoint, it's been pretty clever as well.
I think it's a good point. And also next year's AlphaTauri, if they take as many parts from Red Bull as they say they're going to do and they have a much closer collaboration, that car's actually not going to be too bad.
That's why Daniel went to go next year, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly that. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I imagine he'll just end up getting like a year and a half deal. I think he's signed to the end of the year, from what I can tell. But like at the same time, his Red Bull deal stretches beyond that. So it's not like, it's weird how those deals work, isn't it? So
yeah, Red Bull said he's on loan until the end of the season from them to AlphaTauri, which seems odd because at other times they say that all four drivers are Red Bull drivers and they pick where they go. Like within those two teams.
Yeah, right.
And then suddenly it's like, no, he's our driver and we've loaned him to this team. I
hadn't picked up on that.
Like the way they say
that's a really good point. I'd never picked up on that. But you're right. Like, I remember that was a big thing, wasn't it? When they dropped Gasly and promoted Albon, there was a big thing because we kept saying he's been demoted. And they're like, no, there's no demotion. It's just we're swapping drivers between two teams we're in. It's like, yeah, one of them got demoted, the other one got promoted, like from junior to senior. They're like, no, that's not. That's not it. If anything, it's a sideways move for Pierre. It's like it's not at all. I remember this going back and forth. It was weird at the time. So yeah, that's a very shrewd observation, Mr. Madland.
Can we also say it's so rude of Daniel to steal Oscar's thunder as the amazing Aussie who did a brilliant job as a rookie at Silverstone, and everyone felt sorry for him that he wasn't on the podium and he should have been, as you put in the 60-second review, and he got 36 hours of that, and suddenly it's like, but Daniel, and he's like,
yeah. Although Piastri kind of stole Ricciardo's thunder last year, didn't he? You know, in the summer break. So maybe I'm not saying that like the two were planned, obviously, or two are linked. But
I think Daniel's probably glad that Piastri did, because otherwise the thunder that was being stolen was just Daniel being cut loose and nothing else. Yeah. So yeah, it's great that they're both on the grid in that sense. Yeah.
Piastri was mega, wasn't he? Really good.
So good. Like, and just the way he handled it all, but in that opening stint, and don't forget, he didn't have all the upgrades that Lando had. Now, I'm sure the front wing wasn't worth a huge chunk that would have meant he would have smashed him or something, but it showed that he was able to match him for most of that. And just the way when I interviewed him afterwards as well, I managed to get a chat with him, and he kind of said it surprised him, but that he was calmer up the front because, for the majority of his junior career, that's where he'd been racing. That's what he was used to. So to be back up there, he was like, oh, great. Great fun. This is what I'm used to. This is my kind of like comfortable space. And rather than, oh my God, I'm in a podium position in a Formula One race. So it's funny how I always think that mentally it's harder for these guys, but they've become so attuned to being under pressure, leading races, winning races from such a young age that by the time they reach F1, that actually, for some, isn't that big a deal. It's still leading a race, and they've done that a million times.
Yeah. He's a pretty cool character, isn't he, Piastri? When you talk to him, he's just very, very sure of himself, very confident. I think Brown was right, like, last year, seeing that potential. He's mega. And obviously, Lando killed it as well.
I think sometimes he can come across as being quiet and unexcited, but I think it's just because it's just the way in which he's carrying himself. I don't think he feels the need to. Doesn't mean he's not interested. It's just he doesn't feel the need. It's a little bit like Andy Murray.
Yeah, that's a good comparison,
in that kind of sense of it. And I do think that the longer Oscar's around, I think more of his character will come out. But for now, all he really cares about is trying to stay on par with Lando. And I genuinely think, like you boys have both said, he thinks that he can beat Lando. And this is the perfect scenario for McLaren, I think, because there's lots of chatter about Lando and how he's so desired by so many people up and down the grid, and whether or not he's going to want to stay if McLaren are struggling. This is the perfect solution for them, isn't it? That they've got Oscar there who's pushing him. So they're like, that's fine. You know, they're obviously not going to say that, but they're going to go, well, actually, all our eggs aren't in the Lando basket. And so going forward, I think they're in really good shape.
They're one of the few teams there, I think, if you look at them, who probably have two future world champions there or world champion caliber drivers. Definitely. Obviously, Mercedes, they've got Lewis, who is one, and Russell. I don't think Red Bull do. Don't think Ferrari do. Ooh. I think McLaren. No, I think Charles could be a champion. I don't think Carlos. I think he's always going to be a decent, good driver. But I don't know. Maybe you disagree. But McLaren right now, if you looked at both those guys, you're like, those two guys in the right car, the right season, could win the championship. And I think that's a really strong lineup.
That's an early point to make, that call though on Oscar. because you think of, you know, Carlos in the McLaren as well, beating Lando and then getting the move to Ferrari, and you're like, yeah, like he could well have it. And then over a longer period of time, you get a judgment of, okay, very good, but maybe not got the peaks that is going to need to become a world champion or something ahead of, like you say, a Charles. I think Oscar does have that potential, and yeah, I'd kind of, based on last weekend, definitely say it, but I think you still got to wait a bit longer to kind of see it play out to know. But I think it's just shown, yeah, that Zach made the right call in terms of what they did.
Yeah.
And even if Daniel comes back and absolutely nails it at AlphaTauri and even ends up back in Red Bull at some point and winning races, like, that's because it's an environment that works for him, and the McLaren one didn't, but they found someone that does. So it is funny how that shakes out sometimes.
And funny as well that I was thinking this the other day, you know, Ricciardo's just gone back to AlphaTauri. You know, everyone's super, super happy. Yeah, Ricciardo's back. He's joining a team that's probably 10th, on a good day is 9th in the pecking order. The team he left last year has suddenly had an upgrade, jumped up to being, I don't think they'll be there every single week, but we've seen a really competitive McLaren. So they're now kind of up second, or maybe in that group behind. Red Bull, the team he should be at, are up there in first. So now all we need is Alpine to drag themselves up there as well. And Danny Rick will be like, literally every team I've left has turned into, you know, having a mega car.
I can't wait for HRT to win a race.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe AlphaTauri do it. Who knows? It's about time they won another one.
Yeah. Now, let's get on to the big news. The huge news. The massive news.
Yeah, this is the big news.
Yeah.
The biggest news going.
And it's not
Mick Schumacher's tyre test.
It's not the film. You've seen the film stuff. It was cool.
It's all right, stuff we
can't really talk about if it's actually anything to do with the film, but it was weird to have those people there. But the much bigger event happening in the UK this summer, Lawrence Barreto's wedding is...
I wasn't sure if you were going to say...
I thought you were going to say Wimbledon. I was like, Wimbledon is pretty...
3 days... what day is it today? Thursday. 3 days, yeah. Sunday.
In fact, in less than 72 hours, you will be married.
Yeah, which is really cool when you say that. That does sound
isn't it? That is
very
cool.
Is it cool, or are you absolutely shitting it that you're not ready?
He's adorably excited. It's amazing.
I'm so excited. Nate has never seen me this excited.
No, I don't think I have. I've been at F1 races with him. He's giddy with excitement.
Oh, yeah.
What about... Let's tell a quick story. Because when we were on the... what were those boats called in
the
other
one?
The ribs.
The rib.
Yeah.
You were pretty damn excited when we were on that. I've never. Yes. That's so. For people listening, the entire about a week or so before, and I think we joked about it on this pod, we were telling Lawrence, every single one of us, me, Medders, Lawrence Edmondson, you know, all of your mates from back home, we're telling you, you're going to be jumping out of a plane, or that you were going to be doing something from a great height, and you were shitting it.
Oh, absolutely.
You tried to hide it, but you were shitting it. And then the closer we got to it, you looked sick when we went to that pub and ate. Then when we went round the corner from that pub where we ate lunch and had a beer, and you're like, "What's this?" We're like, "This is what we're actually doing. We're getting on these ribs. What's that? Rigid inflatable boat, I think, which is amazing. It was so fast, and we went kind of round the bottom of the Isle of Wight. I've never seen you look so happy in that moment because you suddenly all the fear that you had that you're going to be jumping. And by the way, I'd be feeling the same way. I hate heights. I can't stand heights at all. If someone took me up, you know, to do a bungee jump, I'd just be like, I'm not doing it. I'll stay up here forever. I'm not jumping off. I'd be the same. So suddenly you could see the moment it all lifted from you. And suddenly you then for the next like 6 hours, you're basically just the happiest I've ever seen. It was great.
It was
really fun. Really, really good fun.
Because I'm
expecting more from the wedding.
I hope so. I hope it's going to be a great day. I'm excited that you boys are going to be there. And we're excited.
I love a wedding. And I love you and Sabrina. So it's going to be great.
You're making me blush.
I know. Sorry, mate.
But thanks. Like, I had a wicked stag do. Like, you boys properly, all of you looked after me really well. I didn't sleep the night before because of the aforementioned story the jumping
out
of the plane.
When you told us that, I felt really bad. I was like, wow, he's actually taking it very seriously.
I genuinely thought it. And what has really frustrated me is that you guys never technically said that's what was going to happen. And I went back through all of the messages and all of the gifts, and I was suddenly thinking, I just convinced myself that this was going to happen. And you all, obviously, because why wouldn't you?
that was it, actually, wasn't it? None of us were saying you're jumping out of a plane, but you kept being like,
we asked for your harness size,
what is your harness size? We did do that for the rib. And then we were like, bring some stuff that, you know, you might, you know, light stuff that, you know, probably aerodynamically friendly, you know, just stuff like that. And you were just convincing yourself over and over, like, I'm jumping out of a plane.
Because I think I think that's the one thing I don't think I could ever do without passing out. I think I would be terrified.
I'm not laughing at you because I'm exactly the same as you, mate. I don't think I'm cut out for that at all. Like, and I don't care what that makes me. Makes me a coward. I don't care. I just don't. Jumping out of a plane, I think I could do if there's someone on my back coming down, but like a bungee jump.
Oh.
Like, what is that about? Why would you do a bungee jump? Like, what on earth? You're trusting in a bit of like a rubber rope to just work. Like, no, I'm sorry. Who made this rope? Who connected it? Who's pushing me off?
You have to trust that they've judged your weight right, because if you're too heavy or too light, you might just hit the ground. Length might not be right. There's too many variables.
I don't think I would enjoy a single second. Everyone says, you'd enjoy when you're down. I'd be like, even when you've stopped bouncing, you're like, how am I going to get back up? What if they drop me?
Yes.
What if, you know, what if they've forgotten how to pull someone back up? Like, what happens then? Do I just hang here for hours? You know, I don't want to do that. So I completely agree with you. Bungee jumping should be outlawed. It's a shit idea. And I'm glad you're getting married.
I'm signing that petition.
This escalated. Sorry, this turned into a rant about bungee jumping. I didn't mean that to be the case.
Especially because he said this had to be a short episode because he needs to get on with planning wedding stuff.
Oh, yeah, wedding stuff. Wedding stuff.
But that's okay. I'm excited that you guys are coming on Sunday. Put some knives in the ground for me so that it doesn't rain.
Knives in the ground?
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. Knives.
Yeah. Put a knife in the soil outside in the garden, and hopefully it won't rain.
What about the ants? What if you kill an ant doing that?
We'll try not to kill any ants as you.
Well, how do you know they're underground,
mate? That's like So do you worry about the ants when you're forking the soil and planting plants?
What about forking soil? Oh, I don't have a garden, so no. When I have a garden, fuck the ants. Yeah, the ants. they live there at their own peril. I'm just saying. But no, fork the ground. I've never heard that. Never heard that in my life. But hey, if it makes you happy in the morning, my neighbours will look outside. What's Nate doing? And I'll just be stabbing the ground.
Yeah. Why did Nate not make it to the wedding? Well, he was arrested for possessing a dangerous weapon.
Possessing a dangerous weapon. Screaming. Okay. No rain.
No. Let's. Okay. I changed my mind. Don't do that. Just turn up, and that's fine.
Okay. Okay, I'll bring a knife with me just in case.
No, don't do that. Please don't do that.
Church wielding it and saying, no rain today, Lawrence.
According to my phone, and I won't give away the location so that you don't get mobbed on your wedding day.
Yeah.
But it's Vegas. it says rain today, at the location, rain tomorrow at the location, 50% chance of rain Saturday at the location, but only windy on Sunday, and Monday's nice, and it's dry and nice for the rest of the following week. So,
amazing.
Two things. One, there's a chance then that that dry spell comes earlier. Like, yeah. I feel like it's trending better than it was. Two, if anyone is sleuthy enough to, from what I've just said, work out where it is, that would be damn impressive.
That would be impressive.
Honestly,
yeah.
In fact, you can come as Nate's plus one if you do that.
Yeah. That's a deal. If you work out where it is, I think you're underplaying how good people are on the internet. Better. Like I've seen. Did you see when Shia LaBeouf put a flag up? It was during lockdown time. So he basically put a flag up. I think it said something like, "He will not divide us." It was about Trump, but he put it up, and there was a camera facing it. And people worked out where it was based on there were planes flying overhead, the cloud cover, and they then found this flag and took it down. Just from like an image. So someone will absolutely, the right person will absolutely be able to work that out.
Does the right person listen to our podcast?
We will find out.
Oh God. I'm gonna, if this happens, Nate.
What a way to finish.
Then it would be an incredible turn of events.
It would. I can't wait.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, if you're out there.
No.
If you're out there.
What?
More coordinate. No, we'll send you one coordinate.
No.
No, we won't. No, we won't. No. No, won't we? Okay. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't.
Okay. We'll end this now, shall we? Yeah, let's end this now. I don't know why I'm asking you guys. I'm in control here, aren't I? Right, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure, as always.
You can read Nate's work.
Yeah, I know.
Only for about 72 more hours. Am I right? That's a wedding joke there. A marriage joke.
That's so bad.
Not sure which one's getting more in trouble. The fact that you brought up Abu Dhabi 21 or that you made a joke like that.
I don't know. Probably both.
Yeah. The episode that Nate was cancelled. It has been coming for however many episodes we've done this show for. But anyway,
it's pretty tame. It's a pretty tame way to get cancelled, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially after I saved bungee jumping.
Stop digging, Nate.
That's true. That is true.
Well, no, I'm not digging. I'm cutting the soil for you, Brito, after you ask me. It's turned into digging.
Oh, no.
Anyway, okay. I will now stop talking.
Thanks. All right, chaps. Thanks very much. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Meta's work on Race.com, my work on F1.com, and please follow us on our social channels at The Padhoc. We will do this again very, very soon.
Don't go bungee jumping. Bye.
My name is Chris Medland, and Todd's the ends.